What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. Great pleasure to be with you as always. We continue the discussion now from the energy oil standpoint. One of the things that Senator Hagerty said that was, I think, so on target was that U.S. Biden energy policies, Green New Deal, climate change, stopping production, stopping pipelines, using federal regulatory agencies to crush our great fossil fuel industry. Well, that's jacked up prices, cut supply, raised prices. We're financing Vladimir Putin and Russia. We're financing them. Anyway, we've got one of America's best energy experts, my pal John Kilduff, founder of the Kilduff Group and publisher of the Kilduff Report and founding partner of Again Capital. John, thank you. How are you?
I've been well, Larry. Yourself? It's great to be on with you again.
Yes, thank you for doing this. You know, I'm reading the front page of the Wall Street Journal above the fold. Frackers hold back production as global oil market tightens. So we're at $90 or $91 a barrel for West Texas. Brent crude's a little stronger. Why are the frackers holding back production?
Partly because of how badly they got burned in the pandemic period, Larry, when oil prices went negative. All of a sudden, the entire industry was called to account on their spending ways, spendthrift spending ways over the years, where they just emphasized drilling over return on capital and just getting money back to investors. And they, you know, given that they cratered the price of oil, it was maybe too good of a thing going on there for a little while. And so now they're obviously been burned, and so they're slowly coming back to the oil fields. But they never want to let that happen to themselves again. And quite frankly, there's a lot of pressures on them from, you know, these environmental, social, governance folks, the banks, everyone, investors of all stripes are making them operate in a much more commercially attractive, if you will, environment. So, again, they're a little chagrined, and they're also getting pressured. So that's why you're seeing that in part.
How much has the Baker Hughes rig count recovered? I don't follow it as closely as I used to, but the last time I looked, it was up from the bottom, but it was way, way, way below the peaks, pre-pandemic.
It's still about half of what it was pre-pandemic, Larry. We have had about 50 rigs come into service from about November, if you want to just pick a date. And then on yesterday, we got five more rigs put into service. But the previous week, we got 15 oil rigs put into service. So I do think there are signs of life here in the shale patch, because despite what I just said to you, to a degree, they cannot help themselves, and I fully expect them to start to ramp things up, particularly if this oil price persists, and it looks like it is, given the strong demand globally and the refusal, basically, of Saudi Arabia to tap their spare capacity and put more oil on the market.
Yeah, so we're around $90 plus. What's your outlook for oil prices?
Well, I don't think it's as dire a situation as some of the folks are out there saying. I can tell you, for example, Ed Morrison, Citigroup, former Undersecretary of State there for President Carter, probably the first energy secretary. He's got a $60 price target by the towards the latter part of the year.
Oh.
For example, of course, yeah. But of course, some of the other banks have are into the stratosphere. I think. At this point, just from a trading perspective, we have to ring the bell on 100. It's something that the market is just going to continue to sort of have a fever about and push towards until we get it. And then we can reassess from there. But the good news for consumers is that we're coming into a part of the year where demand necessarily declines because we lose the heating fuel demand. And that's a very thankful situation for the Europeans and the Ukrainians here as well. And then we got to sort of see where we'll set up for the summer driving season. Larry. But I don't necessarily think we're going to make new highs on oil like we did back in 2008 when we went to 147. Could we go to 110, 115? Yeah, absolutely. But I'm also, you know, cognizant of the argument here, and there are other barrels coming to market and coming online, especially from U.S. shale, that could surprise us over the course of the next couple of months here that could help to alleviate. But, you know, we need our U.S. oil for sure. We need Canadian oil. And I can think we're going to continue to rue the day that that the Keystone Pipeline got picked on so badly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So, you know, you've got Biden policies are very much anti-fossil fuel. You've got all the climate people, the Green New Deal stuff. FERC waging war against pipelines, the SEC waging war against fossil fuel companies, maybe the Federal Reserve, if this woman, Sarah Bloom Raskin, becomes the top Fed supervisor for banking. I mean, she wants to stop allocating. She wants to prevent any bank loans to fossil fuel companies. I mean, I would think they're gun-shy, okay? I mean, it's the best in the world. We're the most efficient, most innovative in the world. We should be producing much more. John, I mean, we were 13 million-plus barrels per day. We're still around, what, 11 million plus barrels per day? That's
right.
Jacked up the price as the world economy has recovered. Senator Hagerty said, you know, these policy measures holding back supply, we're helping to finance Russia with high oil prices.
Yeah, and really a lot of other bad actors, Larry. I mean, you know, usually the oil-producing countries aren't necessarily our friends, or certainly not our best friends, and we've always had an issue certainly with that. And yeah, this is helping Vladimir Putin. That's why, and that's what the killer is going to be. Excuse me, I didn't mean to put it that way, but the hard part of this situation with Ukraine is going to be if we do slap sanctions on Russia that impacts their ability to export oil. Sure, the Russians are going to pay for it, but so are the rest of us. When you hear President Biden allude to pain for everyone, I think that's sort of what he's sort of trying to prepare everyone for, because it could be an epic energy crisis if Russia turns off the spigot, because we cannot afford to lose those barrels, and there's no place to make them up. The Saudis can't make it up. We can't make it up. Canada can't make it up. So we will really be in a tight spot. And, you know, all these pressures, it's so just misguided to me. I get the worry about the climate and all that, and whatever good measures you want to try to take for environmentally speaking to, you know, get the world to a better place is fine. But look, energy is essential to our economy, the global economy. And you saw now this past winter the missteps by the European leadership and the UK that got them into a total mess, you know, paying almost triple-digit oil equivalent prices for their natural gas, for shortages and the like. And every single of one of our recessions over the past decades now, Larry, have been preceded by a spike higher in oil prices. There have been other mitigating factors, of course, which I could enumerate, but oil was always part of the problem, and that's what we're staring down. If they don't do this much more carefully than we have, you just can't, you know, literally flip the switch on this here. It needs to be a very orderly and careful transition to whatever, and especially including, I think, much more of a battery overlay, so you can store the energy. So when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow, like has happened in Texas, literally, you can call on these reserves, because that's what a gasoline in your gasoline tank is. It's stored energy to be ready for you on demand. And that's what's not being thought through here.
Well, I don't see. I mean, if we run sanctions on the Russian Nord Stream 2, walk us through. That is going to impact natural gas prices, but it's going to really impact oil prices. The demand for oil is going to go up. I see one big winner, Russia. I see another winner, Saudi Arabia. Now, what does that do to the U.S.? I mean, it's going to really do damage to, I mean, it might help our producers. They'll make more money, I guess. It's going to kill our consumers. How does that play out?
Well, I mean, exactly what you said. Look, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, as much as, you know, it's problematic, you know, from a policy perspective, it's essential amount of fuel for Europe. And, you know, the history of it is that the Germans have always been trying to make up for World War II with the Russians. And that's why I think Angela Merkel thought she could, you know, sort of wrangle them as an East German person. So that's their sort of, you know, historic, you know, fault. But yeah, Larry, I mean, I always remind everybody, I mean, it's great news for our Texas producers, shale producers, New Mexico, if these prices were to spike on this. But yeah, our economy is two-thirds the consumer. Rise in gasoline prices, I know people might have heard it before, is like a tax on folks because you're taking away from discretionary spending in other areas for clothing, entertainment, you name it, and it's going into the gas tank. And then it's making a way, a lot of it's making its way over to Saudi Arabia and, you know, Kuwait and Qatar and all those folks, you know, are the winners. I will say that this should be very damaging, though, to the Russian economy if they get foreclosed from the international markets. But again, they're like a drowning swimmer. They're going to take us down with them because the energy landscape is just going to be apocalyptic.
When do we get back to 13 million barrels a day?
I'm waiting to see, Larry. I've been doing some. We've been crunching numbers here at my shop, and we are expecting a decent sized ramp over the course of the next several months. But we still won't probably get to 12. It's going to be another couple of years potentially before we get to 13 again, especially because of again the pressures that are being put on the industry and being hamstrung by the increased regulatory environment. There's no two ways about that. They're just not in favor right now, and so they're going to be held up at every turn for a while.
Yeah, my pal Harold Hamm, his brain is probably exploding at all this stuff. I mean, the cavalry's coming. This stuff's not going to be sustainable. But we still got to get through the next 7 or 8 or 9 months. I don't know how this is going to play out, John. It's not good. Would you agree with me? It's not good.
It's a confluence of factors, Larry, that are just it's setting up like a perfect storm, if you will. Given the how demand is racing back, we are fully back to pre-pandemic levels. We'll probably have record energy demand globally come the spring. Because of the rebound in air travel, especially, we already know about the trucking difficulties. So, yeah, Larry, that coupled with a clampdown on emerging supplies ain't good.
No, not good. John Kilduff, thank you, my friend. Stay in touch. Appreciate it very much. Folks, I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We're going to take a quick break. And on the other side is Kelvin Dragemeyer, former director of the White House Office of Science and Technology. Why do we need a $350 billion bill, more spending, more inflation, now in the name of China competition, and it won't do a darn thing for China competition? I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Larry Kudlow.